Welcome to the Aquarimax audio show with Russ and Kim. We provide information on all kinds of aquarium-related topics.
This is episode 273, recorded November 16th, 2015.
Greetings, Aquarimaxers.
Hello again.
So, who have we got today?
We have Joe in Hudsonville, Michigan, and Tom in Provo here in Utah, who we are happy to hear from again. I'm back on the show.
All right.
It's been a while.
Yeah.
Should we go to Joe?
Let's do it.
Okay. He says, have you heard or read anything about Fluval's Aqua Sky LED light? I'm in the planning stages of a 55-gallon planted tank. I like some of the tricks. I know there probably isn't any real need for a thunderstorm in my tank, but it is just cool.
So we looked up a video of this. I just showed Kelly a video a few minutes ago of the Aqua Sky, the demonstration video that actually Fluval puts out.
It's pretty fancy.
On YouTube. You can look it up. If you look up, I think it's... What did I look? I think I just put in Aqua Sky LED, and one of the videos that came up was Fluval's own video. It's pretty cool. What were the things you noticed?
I think my... The thing that I thought was the coolest about it is that you can adjust the color spectrum.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how much red or green or white or blue you want in there to show off different colors in your tank. I know we've talked about this before. I really don't like the really blue lights. Like, I don't really like marine tanks a lot of the time, not because of what's in them, but because of the lighting.
You don't like the actinic blue.
I don't. It's too blue. It makes it look dim. I don't think it shows off the color of the fish or anything else.
Right,
I feel like I have to squint to look in the tank.
And the purpose of the actinic blue is to grow photosynthetic organisms, but yeah.
But if you can have other coral, other colors in there at the same time.
Yeah, and they often do, but yeah, I see what you mean. Sometimes they look a little too blue. But this one allowed you to adjust, and it was not intended for a reef tank.
No.
The type of lighting was not intended for that. It's for freshwater planted, I believe, and fish only marine tanks, and it's pretty neat. It comes with a remote control that allows you to do all kinds of different things. Not only choose the proportions of the different lights or the different colors of light, but also there's a sunrise sunset feature, a moonlight feature,
and like Joe says, there is actually a thunderstorm feature. Which I don't know, if it's raining outside, you could have it rain in your tank too.
Right,
it would match.
Yeah. And you could. And it also can plug into a timer that Fluval also makes. It doesn't come with one, but it integrates with another timer. Mm. So you put the timer in line, actually. You plug it in between the power supply and the light itself, the light fixture itself. And it comes with, it's a 24-hour timer, but it also comes with like a sunrise sunset feature, which I think is kind of nice.
Yeah.
Have things slowly turn on and off. A little more natural for the fish instead of just snap, it's on and scares them to death. Because that can happen if you turn a bright light on in a dark room.
I don't like it when the lights just get turned on when I've been asleep.
Right. So,
imagine it would be even worse if you didn't have any eyelids.
I would, well, yeah, that's very possible. I think the thing that... I really like all the options. The main thing is I want to be able to set it and forget it, which I think you could do with the timer to some extent, but you can't really have the timer, as far as I understand it from the video that I watched, you can't have the just set the timer to take advantage of all the different features that the remote control has.
Can you set it to have your programs go off, though?
You can set it to have it come on and come off. You can set it to have the sunrise sunset. But I don't think you could say, like, I want a thunderstorm to happen every Tuesday or, you know, even every day at 7:30. I don't think so.
Interesting.
It wasn't entirely clear from the video, but I don't think you can do that.
Maybe if anybody who works for Fluval is listening and knows the answer to that question, you can tell us.
Yeah, because I would love to be able to program all those things into the timer, especially if you could do it on different days.
Well, it seems like if they have that you can program, set a program... Mm-hmm. It would make sense that you could do it on a timer. Otherwise, what's the point of having the timer or the program? You would have to have the come on in the timer and then still go over and change the program.
Yeah. Well, I think the idea with the timer is It's going to turn on and off whenever you want it to turn off, which is an on and off, which is cool. And then whenever you want to mess with it and say, I'm going to have a thunderstorm now, because that would be fun. You can pick up the remote and make a thunderstorm, but then it'll turn off when you're done. You know, it was kind of the idea. You still have the lights coming on and off at the same time.
It's kind of a funny idea to have a remote control to your fish tank.
Yeah, but I've even seen people hook up, they'll hook up their misting system to a remote control in, like, a vivarium.
Mm-hmm.
And so you get this, like, cloudy effect all of a sudden. They, you know, point the remote control at their tank and hit it. And it's not just raining, but
it's misting.
It's ultrasonic fog. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, you know, people do that kind of thing, which is neat. But I would say, I think it is a neat system. It would be fun. I don't know if I would actually play with it enough to make it worth it unless I could program those things and just leave them. And
so you might want to talk to a sales representative before investing.
Yeah, but it's cool. It's very cool.
Mm-hmm. It's cool.
And it's nice and bright. One of the things it mentioned was that the angle that the LED lights are pretty low because they're all waterproof, so they're close to the water surface, and so it really spreads throughout the tank, unlike some LEDs that are, you know, kind of focused in one spot.
Kind of a narrow beam.
Right. So I thought that was cool. So, yeah, I haven't experienced it firsthand, but I thought the video was fun, and if anybody else has
feedback on that. We can put the video up for you guys to see, too.
Yeah, and if anybody has one, that'd be cool to get, you know, send us your thoughts, your review. What do you think?
I think that'd be good.
Yeah. So thank you, Joe.
Okay. Let's go to Tom in Provo. And I don't know exactly what noises pick up on the microphone, guys, but if you hear a weird pawing noise in the background, it's just the cat.
He really wants to go outside.
He thinks he wants to go outside, but it's cold, and so I will open the door, and he will say, oh, never mind, and then I will shut the door, and then he will scratch at the door again, because it's been 30 seconds, so maybe it's spring again, you know.
Yeah, that's kind of how he is.
So
we apologize
ignore our psychotic cat.
Pay no attention to the cat behind the curtain.
Yeah. Okay. So, Tom in Provo, he says, it's been a year since Aquaramax has heard from me, but I assure you, during that time, I have neither missed a podcast nor abandoned the hobby.
So it's glad that we're glad to have Tom back.
Yes. For those who are new, I have a 37-gallon heavily planted bow front supplemented with compressed CO2. Compressed CO2 is more expensive initially, but for both time and money seems to me a good choice in the long run. Last time I contributed, I had a couple of new albino placos about an inch each and was unsure of their genders. Evidence is now irrefutable that one is male and one is female. As many as a dozen fry have appeared from time to time, and although I had no intention of raising any of them, one survived and is now itself about an inch long, while the parents are about 2 or 3 inches each.
Yeah, they're pretty persistent about that sort of thing. They're quite tough. I gifted some to one of our kids' elementary school teachers.
Yes. She had like a whole tank.
Last time we visited her, she had like a 55-gallon tank with, I don't know how many, a number
a
of them. All descendants, the ones that we had originally given her. So, yeah, they're pretty good at that. It's kind of fun, actually. I always admire fish that manage to grow up despite all odds.
Yes.
Like, I can't even remember what we called them, but I remember in Hawaii, I could not get a hold of microworms or Walter worms or anything like that.
They didn't have them there.
That you couldn't.
Like
you couldn't
ground,
ship them in
even.
Legally. It was not, and
yeah.
They said if you can collect them, which I tried, it didn't work. But then it would be fine. But I wasn't allowed to have them imported, and so I wanted to raise some white clouds. I had these long fin white clouds I got from a local breeder there, and I wanted to get them to spawn, and I did, and they spawned and produced a lot of fry, but very few of the fry survived. But one of them did. I think we called him Big Al.
Oh, that sounds kind of familiar now.
One of them did, and I'm not sure what exactly he ate. I tried liquefry or, you know, something like that, and he was the only one that really did well. And once we moved back to the mainland, I was able to get those same white clouds to produce lots of fry because I could get microworms. But in Hawaii, there was just this one that grew up.
That's funny.
Just one in the tank. So it was kind of interesting. Similar sort of story.
Okay. He says, however, the process of placo reproduction remains obscure to me. The male spends most of his time in a hole in a rock about 3 inches deep, with only the tip of his tail protruding. I've yet to see the female anywhere near this location, but then Fry suddenly appear. I suppose the placos figure it's their own business what goes on when I'm not watching, but perhaps you can shed some light on this mysterious, to me anyway, process. In any case, I'm pleased with how the tank is doing and hope other Aquarimaxers will continue to be forthcoming about what's happening in the ecosystems they've created. It doesn't matter whether a system is large or small, simple or complex, it's just fun hearing what people are up to. Beatus est pisciculus.
See, I've missed that.
Yeah, that's been
a while. We're glad you're back, Tom. Well, and we're glad you never missed an episode.
Yes, that's also very nice. Russ can certainly enlighten you on the mysteries of placo romance.
Yeah. Well, bristle those placos. Basically, the male finds a cave-like area, which can be, in your case, in a rock. It can be driftwood. It can be a ceramic cave. It can be part of a flower pot. I've had them spawn in, let's see, mine have been in driftwood, in ceramic cones. I think they may have spawned in a terracotta flower pot tray.
Yeah, I think you did that.
Various things. Anyway, the male stakes out a spot like that, and it's his territory. And now you know, by now the male is the one who has a lot of bristles on his face. Females have few, if any. And he will stake out that spot. He will eventually entice the female in there, have her lay her eggs, and then he'll kind of chase her out, usually. And then he will protect
the eggs. He's the one that usually takes care of the eggs and the babies.
Yes. And he will guard and fan the eggs, you know, making sure with his... I think it's his pectoral fins or is it his ventral fins? I can't remember now. Anyway, he fans the eggs to keep a flow of oxygen going through. And the eggs are fairly large for the size of the fish. And at least with mine, I've always been kind of orangish colored. And then they're, how big would you say they are?
I don't know if I ever actually saw the eggs.
Like the size of a metal BB.
Okay, pellet. Like a BB gun BB.
Yeah, exactly. Something close to that. And after he's taken care of the eggs for a week or two, they'll hatch. And when they hatch, they're just a tiny little... they're a big yolk sac attached to a little thread of a fish. And they'll sit there like that, and he'll still take care of them, still fan them and everything. He doesn't leave the cave area very much. Sometimes I've seen them leave for very short periods of time, but it's not even... A lot of times it seems like they're there all the time, like 24/7. Mm-hmm. They may duck out very briefly from time to time. I have on occasion, you know, felt sorry for them and wanted them to eat something. I'll drop like a little morsel of food right near the cave entrance and they'll nip out and grab it and dart back in. But a lot of times they don't eat during this whole time. And the fish, you know, once they hatch will gradually... absorb the yolk sac and become a little bigger and thicker around. And then when they're about maybe half an inch or three quarters of an inch long, they'll start coming out of the cave. And he will sometimes, you know, stay around a little longer and herd them back into the cave for a little while and so on. But eventually they'll go out into the rest of the tank. And then at that point, once they're swimming around the rest of the tank, they're pretty self-sufficient. They'll just gnaw on whatever you give them. Anything that the parents would eat, they'll eat. They'll eat algae chips or bits of, you know, zucchini or shelled frozen peas that have been thawed, whatever, that kind of stuff. And they grow, they take a while to grow, but they'll, it depends on how much they get to eat, but they'll grow pretty well, and usually within a year or so, year and a half, they'll be ready to reproduce. They will reproduce as small as the ones that you mentioned, 2 or 3, sometimes even smaller than 2 inches they'll reproduce. But a lot of times they're bigger than that too. And that's about it. I think the males get territorial, so you don't want to keep, if you're raising a brood of them, you don't want to keep the males together in a small tank. In a 55, you can get away with a couple of males or a bigger tank, but in a smaller tank than that, it's hard to have males that are together unless you have a lot of hiding places, because they will get a little mean with each other. But that's about how the placo reproduction goes.
I know sometimes... as soon as one batch is done, they would just lay more eggs. So sometimes you would take the female out.
Yes, or the male.
Or the male. Take one of them out for a while so he could have a break from just sitting inside the cave, make sure he was eating enough in between batches of babies.
Right, because they will just reproduce like crazy and keep going. So I think it's beneficial to allow the male a chance to recover for a few weeks between batches. Or if you can't, if he gets started right away, then after the second batch, then take him out, let him rest for a while. Mm-hmm. Yep. Currently, because when we moved a couple of, I guess it's been about 3 years ago, we had to get rid of most of them because most of them were in our 55-gallon tank, our reproducing population. We didn't get to keep the 55. We sold most of the bristlenoses with the 55. We have one. Mm-hmm. Still, one bristlenose, a male, but we don't have any females, so they're not breeding now. But yeah.
Which is kind of weird.
It is kind of weird. They're fun fish, and I had three different color varieties, in fact, reproducing. I had the first male I ever got was a calico. Mm-hmm. So they have lighter patches on their dark body. They have like natural coloration and the lighter patches, which vary. From fish to fish, and also with the age of the fish, the younger ones seem to have a little bit more than the adults, but it depends. Some of them are more or less, that way all the time. And then his mate was an albino. And so their young all looked like normal plecos, just the normal colored plecos. But their descendants, we got all kinds of fun stuff. We got calicos and browns, we got albinos and fun stuff.
Really light calicos.
Yeah, we got some interesting variations. Mm-hmm. So that was fun.
Yeah.
But it sounds like you've got a pretty good situation there with your planted tank. One thing I would say is that if you do get, you probably won't get a lot of them surviving in there, just because, as you said, you don't have intention of raising them. But if you get many more, or if you get, if that one that's growing up turns out to be a male, you'll probably want to rehome it. Because 37 gallons is not really big enough for two males. And if you end up getting, six or more of them in there, you're probably going to want to rehome them just for the safety of your plants. Because they're pretty good with plants in small numbers. If you get larger numbers of them, they go over the plants enough that the plants are going to suffer. I remember raising several broods of them in a tank that had a lot of Anubias in them, in the tank. And the, the bristlenoses really did a number on the Anubias leaves because there were so many of them in there. You have 45 little bristlenoses in there, even when they're small, and the Anubias doesn't take kindly to it. They're just nibbling too much on the leaves. So you'll probably be fine unless you get larger numbers, though. And they certainly do a good job with algae. I remember putting one in a tank quite a few years ago that had a patina of algae all along the back. Put a bristlenose in there, within 24 hours, it was gone. It had eaten all of it. So they're efficient at that. They don't eat all types of algae, but they're pretty good about the type that tends to grow as a thin film on glass.
Mm-hmm. So. Oh, look, there he is right now, munching away.
Yep.
He just came out. He heard us talking about him.
Yep. And it's good to give him supplemental food, of course, an algae chip. Once in a while, some zucchini or some peas or different kinds of vegetables like that. There's not enough algae in the typical tank to satisfy them, so it should be supplemented fairly frequently. All right, well, I think that's about all we got for this week. Except for one other thing. Tom mentioned to me, he actually left a Google Voice message because he mentioned that he was having trouble getting through using info@aquariumax.com email. Now, I'm not sure if other Aquariumaxers have tried to send in contributions and have been rejected. So, if anyone out there has tried to send a message through info@aquariumax.com and failed, please send us a Google Voice message so I know about it, because I want to see if this was just a fluke thing or if there's some issue I need to address. And then the other thing is, if any of you would be willing to just send a test message to info@aquariumax.com, doesn't even have to have any real content in it, just say, this is a test to make sure your email's working, send it to me. I would appreciate that, just to be able to solve this problem.
Because make sure it's working.
I want to make sure it's still working.
Get your communications.
Because it would be really sad if we didn't. If it's something about particular email domains or something that's causing the problem, because we got Joe's
email just fine, and we have been, and there are others who contribute regularly that we get the emails from. So I'm just not sure what the issue is, and I'd like to narrow it down. Mm-hmm. So if any of you notice anything you've tried before, please let us know through a Google Voice message. And if you would just like to help us test it out, then just send a test message to info@aquariummax.com.
There you go.
All right.
Until next week.
May the fish
be with you.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Aquariummax Audio Show. For additional episodes, please visit aquariummax.com. To leave comments or questions that could be featured on an upcoming podcast, leave a message at 801-477-0629 or email us at info@aquariummax.com.